a Central Indiana business pioneer with an eye on and a passion for workforce development. Thomas P. Miller has grown his two-person startup into a national consulting firm and in the process helped to write the workforce and economic development playbook for states and regions around the country. Get to know the man behind TPMA, Tom Miller, on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast. Hello and welcome to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. I'm Gary Dick. Tom Miller started TPMA back in 1989 when workforce development played an important role in boosting economic growth. It certainly still does today, and Miller's team is laser-focused on getting government, economic development organizations, and higher education on the same page. And I am pleased to be joined on the podcast this week by Tom Miller, founder, president, and CEO of TPMA, formerly Thomas P. Miller & Associates. Tom, how are you?
Good, Gary. How are you doing today?
It's very good and great to be with you as always. It's been a little while. You've had a lot going on. This month, February, right, celebrating 35 years of your business.
That's correct, Gary. On February 12th, 1989, long time ago, got started around workforce and economic development.
Which at that time, if I'm remembering correctly, at that time, those were relatively new terms, right?
Yes, it really was, Gary. I think in those days, economic development practitioners recognized the importance of workforce. It was very important, but it's gone from being very important to mission critical these days if you're trying to produce an economy that's very vibrant in a state or a city or region.
Yeah, give us, to tee things up, kind of a thumbnail description of TPMA. You know, this is, workforce and economic development, critical issues for communities and states around the country. You've built a business on this and grown it now, I think, to some 40-plus states around the country. Talk about your consulting firm, what it's all about, and the services you provide.
Well, one of the things when I first sit down with new prospects or clients, I always say I'm not a lawyer, not an engineer, not an architect. We live at the intersection of education, workforce, and economic development. So We have stayed at that intersection for 35 years, as we just said. But the services and the support we provide states and communities has grown significantly. That intersection has grown significantly.
Think about back to 1989 in the early 90s when you were formed the company, were growing the company. Talk about the landscape when it comes to economic development, workforce development, what it was like back then dealing with communities around the state and maybe beyond, and how it's changed over the years.
Well, there was really at that time, we had not yet seen the commercialization of the internet. That didn't come until several years later. So when you talked about technology, you tended to use the phrase data processing. Yeah. And didn't talk about digital economy much. And workforce itself, that was a little bit of a new term then. At the time, you tended to talk more about job training. In fact, the major federal legislation at that time was JTPA, Job Training Partnership Act. So the lingo has come a long way, as have the programs.
Well, fast forward to today, and certainly workforce is such a critical issue for states, communities, but states all over the country, everyone's fighting for talent, the right kind of talent, the right, changing economy, new skills needed. It's a complex issue, a lot of moving parts. How would you assess Indiana and how Indiana is approaching workforce development?
Indiana's always been recognized. I would say the governor I worked for was the first governor to really, the governor and lieutenant governor at that time, Governor Bob Orr, Lieutenant Governor Mutz, both recognized the importance of workforce earlier than most. And I think since then, we've had a string of governors who have recognized the importance of that. And even to the administration of this governor, Governor Holcomb, has continued that legacy of trying to be at the cutting edge of workforce issues.
You mentioned Bob Orr and John Mutz, and it's a little off track here, but you talk about them being visionary when it comes to workforce. And I think back to Bob Orr when it came to, and John Mutz, when it came to international business recruitment and really putting a focus on Indiana going after companies in Japan and other, you know, places that others weren't doing. And I think they were probably criticized. I think they were criticized at the time maybe for doing it, but what a visionary kind of thing that was and how it's paid off so many times over for Indiana.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Gary. In addition to the workforce vision they saw, and frankly, some of the early starts that you saw at that time in the technology era, they were very active in international recruitments, specifically Asia, and the track record that they created, I think, speaks for itself.
Yeah. As you look at the challenges facing communities, facing states around the country, zeroing it in on Indiana, what do you see as the big challenges that communities are facing when it comes to the issues, whether it's workforce development, economic development, just trying to make their communities the best places to live, work, and play, which is kind of the buzz phrase these days?
Well, I think one of the challenges that's out there right now, I think, is trying to get the right balance of programming for those that are in the K-12 system, those that are college bound, those that are not college bound. Everybody needs, irrespective of whether you're college bound or non-college bound, you need to have a set of certificates, credentials that are post-secondary, post the high school years. So trying to find that right balance around the state, I think, is certainly doable, but no small challenge.
Talk about education and that changing, mindset in Indiana. Certainly, Indiana has some great four-year institutions, public and private, both really some incredible places. But that changing dynamic of the need for, as you mentioned, that education credentials after high school and being trained to do something is that part of a culture change that's happening here? We've got the four-year colleges and universities, but it's not the end-all, be-all. You've got these options of two-year institutions, and they're an important part of the mix.
Yes, it is a challenge. I think one of the things that's not been widely noted in Indiana is that the data bears out that Indiana is one of the most active states as it comes to innovation at the K-12 level. We lead the nation, arguably, in privatizing and that type of thing, the K-12 system. I know that's got some controversy attached to it. But with that said, we have more people getting dual credit, advanced credit in high school than I think any other state in the nation. So I think our challenge is, what do we do with that? What does that mean? How does that play out in the lives of Hoosier families, but also the institutions, public supported one as well as the private institutions? How do they play in that whole environment too?
As a state like Indiana, manufacturing state, it's obviously changing in a big way in terms of the kind of manufacturing. Of course, you talk about advanced manufacturing, but the electrification of the auto industry, new energy, microchips, and all those types of things that Indiana is being successful in attracting, that brings a whole new skill set, I would think, into the mix.
It does. And frankly, we're fortunate to have two institutions that coordinate well together. We have the largest single system community college in the nation in Ivy Tech. And Vincennes University is second to none when it comes to quality, especially in some of those critical sectors that you just mentioned. So we're really fortunate that we have two institutions that are really at the cutting edge of being able to support the talent needed by that advanced manufacturing industry.
Are you sensing there's an increasing, maybe a better partnership between business and academia now? You know, it seems to be, I think, from time to time at odds, business saying, hey, we're not getting the, kinds of people we need, the talent we need, the education we need out of these universities. Do you think that's getting better?
I do. And I think there's an increasing recognition by the private sector that they need to be more actively engaged. They need to be more actively listened to at the type of talent and skills they need. And I think there's a receptivity on the part of the institutions, whether they're public or private in Indiana, to be effective talent partners for that private sector.
What are the big issues that you're seeing, that TPMA is seeing as you get around? Because as I mentioned, you're now in dozens of states, right?
Yes. We're very fortunate and blessed to be able to work across the country in many of these things. So one of the things that I think bodes well for Indiana is we've always had a fairly active work-based learning effort. It used to be referenced as co-op programs or internships. That's right. Kind of an old-fashioned jargon. It's now apprenticeship and work-based learning and so forth. So we've got a great platform to build on, and we just had a lot of activity over the past 12 to 18 months of private sector groups as well as public sector groups visiting Europe and looking at some of the Western European models of apprenticeship. And I think that bodes well for Indiana's future and for the people that are going to be able to take advantage of some of those programs.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the apprenticeships, because that seems to be very much an increasing focus here in Indiana. Is that the future? I mean, do you think these apprenticeship programs are really going to be kind of the direction that Indiana goes in?
Yes, I do think that's going to be a growing factor in Indiana's success. First place, let's just be honest, apprenticeship, work-based learning is not a new idea. Mm-hmm. It's a centuries-old idea that's now being applied in new and different ways in the current economy we're in. So I think that positions Indiana nicely. And while we can't adapt exactly Western European programs to the Hoosier culture, there's certainly success factors we can adapt and then customize them to fit our own culture.
Tom, as your company's getting around the country, where are some places that you would point to say they get it, they understand it, what they're doing is really, they understand what workforce and economic development and a newer economy is all about? Are there good examples of places around the country that are doing well?
Well, I think the southeast part of the United States, about 25 or 30 years ago, they recognized that they were behind the Midwest and other parts of the country in providing skills training for adults. And so they have more modern adaptation to post-secondary learning. So I think there's lessons to be learned from some of the Southeast, some of our partners in the Southeast there. Certainly, Ohio has done an excellent job with what I'd call sector-based development as well as apprenticeship. So I think we can look around and pick up ideas and success factors that we can adapt to Indiana.
How about some of these newer sectors of the economy, if you will, that Indiana is being successful at attracting, semiconductors, chip plants, which presumably, theoretically, with the CHIPS Act, there may be more of that down the road to come. But is Indiana, from a workforce standpoint, positioned to take advantage of that?
Yes, I think they are. I know a couple different places, Ivy Tech and Vinson's, are both working actively with those sectors of the economy and adapting customized programs to precisely provide the workers for those needs. So that's, I think, great that we have built that platform that can continue to be enhanced and enriched. I will also say that our higher ed institutions, Purdue has done an excellent job, as has Indiana University. And let's not forget, we have a very robust private college system in Indiana, and we've got some dynamite institutions in that sector, and there have been a lot of collaboration between the private institutions as well as the publicly supported universities in terms of articulation agreements, in terms of credit, and so forth.
Are there things, Tom, you mentioned the Southeast United States, and I know out west, I think, Utah and Arizona and some of these places have been very successful at attracting business. From a competitive standpoint, what does Indiana need to do? What additional does Indiana need to do maybe to compete head-to-head with some of those states? Are there things that states you've worked with, communities you've worked with in the Southeast that you could point to? Any examples of things you're doing down there?
Yeah, I think maybe one thing is in the West, because of the just really population dispersion in other regions. You see a lot more interstate coordination there than you might see in the Midwest and so forth. So you've got several states in the western part working on water and a variety of issues that are important to them. We don't see quite as much coordination among the states here in the Midwest, I think. Yeah. I do think in Indiana's case, it is important for us to maybe be an active leader in reaching out to our neighbors, because we have pockets down around Louisville that the Indiana side of the economy benefits a lot from, in Cincinnati and other spots around the state, obviously Gary and Chicago. So we have a lot of reason to work with our neighboring states, because working with those neighboring states helps our own cities and communities that are impacted.
And perhaps an example of what you speak is this whole hydrogen hub, and that coalition between or among Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, I believe, and what could be a hydrogen corridor.
Yes, that's a great point, Gary. And I think one of the things that I've been encouraged about the last 12 or 18 months, I'm sitting out here at an office where our new office is at 16 Tech, and the Applied Research Institute, I know, has been very active in securing three federal grants that I'm aware of that focus, as you said, on hydrogen and new technologies. And I think that bodes well for Indiana as we seek to secure additional investment beyond our own state borders.
Well, again, you talked about those three designations, those federal designations that I think are right. Hydrogen, I don't know if it's IT, chips. But to get one of those, I know I've talked to people who said for Indiana to get one of those would have been a coup. But to get three is really an indication that things are headed in the right direction in a lot of respects here.
Well, and I want to put an exclamation point on those dollars they're securing are our tax dollars that are being brought back and put to use here in Indiana. So I do think that that was a minor miracle to be able to secure three federal grants.
Yeah. And you mentioned 16 Tech. And for those who aren't aware of this development here in Indianapolis, it had been talked about for many years, for decades, I think, several mayoral administrations, but has come to life certainly and is growing as a real technology innovation hub, if you will, by the old Busch Stadium on West 16th Street there in Indianapolis. Tom, as you look at that development as an example, and we're talking specifically Indianapolis, what does a development like 16 Tech mean for Indianapolis when it comes to talent attraction, innovation, and just the image of Indianapolis and central Indiana?
Well, I think it stimulates the kind of innovation we need. And you've already mentioned advanced manufacturing, but frankly, in other parts of our economy that are really critical. I think you've outlined, did a good job summarizing the 16 Tech development. In the facility I'm sitting in right now, this facility, EMC Squared, was designed to allow other parts of Indiana to work on advanced manufacturing projects, both the communities themselves, but frankly, more importantly, the businesses that are in those communities. So I think 16 Tech, while it certainly has value for Indianapolis, has been designed so that it would be able to engage with other parts of the state economy beyond Indianapolis.
As you look, Tom, as well, at what might be next for 16 Tech, a lot of momentum when it comes to some of the areas of the economy, innovation and data centers, and the role of the legislature in what we're talking about, economic development, workforce development, innovation, building the economy. How important, because as I, you know, in recent weeks, we've seen big announcements down in Jeffersonville at the River Ridge Commerce Center with Meta, you know, Facebook, Instagram, data center going in there, massive investment, several billion dollars. Similarly, Google looking to put a big data center up in Fort Wayne in Northeast Indiana. There's a data center up in Northwest Indiana. And everyone tells me it was a change in law three or four years ago at the State House that really opened the door for these investments.
I think so. And you're exactly right, Gary. I was going to mention that the legislature, I think, listened to some guidance about the fact that Indiana wasn't as competitive. And as you just noted, several years ago, did in fact pass legislation that made us much more friendly to data centers. And now we've seen that that legislation has in fact worked. We're seeing different data centers around the state. So, and those represent significant investment and high skill, high education types of jobs that we want. And I know recently the legislature has taken a stab at providing legislation in the whole workforce area around Speaker Houston, I think, was instrumental in introducing getting passed in the last session. So I think good things are going to come out of some of the career accounts and some of the things that were set up in House Bill 1002 last year.
Much more with Tom Miller after the break. We'll talk about a leadership change and what's next for his company when the Business and Beyond podcast returns.
At PNC Bank, we're committed to making a difference in the lives of our customers and communities by helping them move forward financially. As a Main Street bank, we try to do right by our customers with every encounter. Our local teams offer personalized financial advice to help guide you in making the best decision. We're proud to be part of your community. PNC Bank. See how we can make a difference for you at pnc.com. Copyright 2022, the PNC Financial Services Group, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. My guest this week is the founder, the president, and the CEO of TPMA, formerly Thomas P. Miller and Associates, Tom Miller. And Tom, a couple of big things happening as we begin 2024 for you, celebrating 35 years in business this month, and also a change in leadership. You're still certainly involved with the company, but a new CEO has taken the reins, took the reins at the beginning of the year.
Yes, I've been trying to figure out my own exit from TPMA eventually. I still love what I do, but time catches up with all of us. And I was fortunate to be able to get to know and eventually ask him to join TPMA as my successor, Mark Grommelsbacher, originally from DuBois County. And more recently with, he's been a successful businessman himself, more recently with Elevate Ventures, and then he agreed to take over the day-to-day operation of TPMA and allow myself to go to more grandkid games, Gary, which is where you and I used to hang out.
That's exactly right. And that is a great thought indeed. That's awesome. You know, you mentioned DuBois County and, you know, made me think of, economic development, workforce development. You know, everybody talks about Indianapolis and Fort Wayne and Evansville, but more rural communities. And I think of Jasper, which has achieved such great success over many years with everything they do down there. It's really impressive. But how important, how would you assess the state of kind of rural economic development, workforce development? You know, there are some areas of the state that it's very tough. And some of these places have kind of given up. You know, they don't know what to do. How important is that piece of the workforce development, economic development plan?
Well, I think as you look around and you note some of the successes in Indiana, you mentioned Jasper, and there's certainly many more things going in Fort Wayne and other places around Indiana that we could note. I think the thing that made them resilient, to use a term of the day, is the fact that they never relaxed on their economic development efforts. It's economic development, I would argue workforce too, are both areas that you never completely get done. And so I think it's important as some of the more successful communities continue to grow that they not get, not kick back and think that it's over. You've constantly got to be working on it. Those that maybe have not had such good fortune or maybe were unfortunate to have a major employer leave or whatever, I think there could be a bright future ahead. I think it requires some planning. You can't monetize an idea, but you can monetize a plan. And planning involves collaboration with different parts of the community and coming up with a vision with specific things that can be executed on and getting yourself ready for when those opportunities present themselves.
And I guess I've always said, in addition to that, leadership in communities is obviously so important, and especially in these rural communities. Are there things you think from a state standpoint, legislatively or otherwise, I don't know, that can be helpful specifically to some of these rural areas that have not enjoyed the success maybe that other parts of the state have?
Well, one of the things that I've encouraged really any state institutions, those organizations or institutions like IEDC and other organizations that have that statewide reach, I think it's really important for them to suggest at times best practices and suggest what's working and what they've seen working. They have the ability to see a lot of things that are working around the state, whether it's in high school education, it may be in innovation, it may be in a number of housing or maybe other things. But just being able to point out to those that need some help where some things that are working are, I think can be very helpful. And I think you nailed it when you said it's all about leadership. Because often when you see, you start peeling back the curtain and trying to figure out, well, why is some community successful? You'll find a great leader or two or three that have been working together.
Yeah. Final couple questions, kind of to look ahead. One is, Tom, I'd be interested in your perspective on Indiana as you look ahead. You look at some of these recent and these continuing economic development wins, big plants in electric vehicle batteries and components, solar, new energy, huge investment in Northwest Indiana, another $850 million deal in River Ridge for solar, a solar company, computer chips, semiconductors, some of these areas that are new to Indiana. Where do you see the future for the state when it comes to, workforce and economic development and really being competitive in this new economy? Do you feel good about where things are going?
I think Indiana is well positioned. And I think Indiana's future, as we look ahead, is bright as it relates to economic growth and job creation and wage growth. I think areas where we may want to focus a little more attention might be in areas like, when we have successful companies, what can we be doing to keep them here, to keep them, Indiana-based and grow? We see the enormous success that a company like Eli Lilly has, and all companies can't become an Eli Lilly, but if we're able to keep some of those companies here and grow, that's a great thing.
How about for TPMA, Tom? I know you've, we talked about the leadership change, but as you look at the company going forward, is there a focus area or things you want to accomplish here in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, I think we're always going to be noted as a company that wants to grow regions, grow communities, and yes, try to solve problems. But really, I think we're more opportunistic. We like to look around the corner and see where the puck's headed and where we need to be going. Yep. So I think we're continuing to be that way. I think you're going to see more efforts at TPMA in the way of innovation and entrepreneurism. Mark Grommelsbacher has a great background in that. And so I think we're going to be trying to become a spark in the Indiana's innovation area.
In that whole, folks, I tell you, as we leave, that made me think. In fact, we did a story on the show this week. You might want to check it out. You may be aware of it. In Camden, Indiana, which is Carroll County, there's an old theater there that has, I'm sure, has been vacant, but was very popular. It was an opera house, actually. And there's a farmer in Carroll County who is turning that into an innovation hub. It's an amazing story, and it gets back to what we were talking about with rural economic development, that kind of thing. But here's a farmer in that community who says, we need, as you say, a spark to help local innovators to maybe stay here and grow their ideas and those kinds of things. So that may be one for you to follow up on, Tom.
Thank you very much for that. I have not. Been a while since I was with Carroll County. So Camden, here we come.
Very good. Hey, Tom Miller, it has been a real treat to catch up with you. TPMA, formerly Thomas P. Miller and Associates, congratulations on 35 years this month. That is an incredible accomplishment. You've done much for Indiana in so many ways. So appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you very much, Gary.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. And we will also hopefully see you soon on the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. It is a weekly conversation with achievers in business, sports, entertainment, and beyond. And you can download all of our episodes, more than 150, and also get Indiana Business News 24/7. All you have to do is go to insideindianabusiness.com. I'm Gary Dick. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.